Naturally, as humans, we fear the unknown. Long-term fight or flight response is, of course, stress response, and that changes the way we see things.
Two days ago, I woke up very excited about a dinner party I was going to have with my friends that evening. But the day did not turn out quite as planned. I had to pretty much flee the state in 24 hours. I had to pack up my stuff from my apartment in Melbourne, get on a plane, and get home to my family before everything went into lockdown. I think we're all pretty united in the current struggle against COVID-19. I'm going to call upon a dear friend of mine who is a fourth year medical student. He would like to remain anonymous because it's important that there are not too many, I guess, expert opinions going around, but we do talk about what this will mean for humanity in general. I'm going to simply refer to him as John Doe from now on. So John grew up in China and he experienced the SARS epidemic a few years back, which greatly impacted his life and the way that he is currently looking at the coronavirus situation. It's a really interesting opinion on how this mass hysteria has spread, whether it's warranted, and also what we can do to help each other out in what's going to be a really difficult time for a lot of people. I hope all of you are staying safe in the safety of your own homes at the moment. Without further ado, here's John. So I think the thing that has dominated everybody's conversation in the last couple of weeks is, of course, the coronavirus outbreak. So I'd be interested to get your point of view. Why do you think this is so different from previous outbreaks, like swine flu or SARS, let's say?
It's different in two senses, two different aspects, I guess. That's most important. One is that geographically it's different, so it spreads across more continents and affects more countries than some of the other epidemics or pandemics that we've seen. But also, secondly, temporally it also is spaced differently, in the sense that it happened at a time where social medias are more prominent. And the overall societal sentiment towards a disease like this is more affected by how everyone is communicating their feelings, rather than in the past where official medias have been reporting on what they felt people were thinking. So we're hearing from everyone directly, or at least we're hearing from some people directly, and it is, I feel like it's the feeling that's different. In terms of actual disease, as some people might have seen, genetically, SARS-CoV-2, which is this current coronavirus, is pretty similar to SARS-CoV-1, which is the early 2000s SARS outbreak that occurred in Hong Kong and spread across China and some other areas. So that's how I felt.
Okay, that's a really interesting point you bring up about everybody sort of having a voice on social media. This is amplified in particular. I actually saw a meme the other day that was pretty much, the gist of it was that I guess our parents' generations have lived through wars, if not other crises, situations just like this, but they've never experienced the hype that is brought with this current coronavirus outbreak because this is the first time such a global issue has arisen in the time of social media. So I guess my question to you is, do you think that it is a little bit, you know, just the hype, or is it very fair that we are treating this as seriously as we are?
I think it is entirely justifiable, and in fact we should treat it seriously. The issue that a lot of us have seen is that sometimes there's unjustifiable panic that we have observed, particularly on social media. It is quite obvious to most people that panicked people talks louder, and it's not just in real life but also on social media. So
do you mean that people who are panicked, their voices get heard more through social media?
That's right. And because they're speaking more and they're using more social media platform and they are voicing it, they get heard more. Another temporal paradigm in terms of media is that now we're no longer just dealing with individual persons generating content. We are also dealing with bots generating content. And these bots obviously are created for a reason, most likely for profit, for whether advertisement or otherwise. And the way that they generate profit certainly, at least partly, depends on clicks. So now we're seeing a lot of these bots, and most social media companies are trying to fight them, which automatically, using AI, generates somewhat sensical but hyped up and extremist views to in order to attract more clicks. And so, in fact, sadly, a lot of current trending topics started trending because they're somewhat popular, and these bots got held onto it and made them more popular by generating content that's completely irrational and the only purpose of which is generating clicks. So I don't think we as a society should be the sole entity to be blamed for this new paradigm, but instead we should also be aware that our society is in fact being affected by AIs already.
It's like the toilet paper thing, right? Like, I was so convinced that I wasn't going to buy into the panic buying, but when I saw it continually on my newsfeed that everyone was stocking up, and then I saw that things were running out everywhere, I just felt like I was going to get left behind if not. So I guess then what I'd love to clarify is what is fake news and what is not. For example, we are sitting at a solid, healthy 2 meters apart right now, very much in line with social distancing measures. I feel like that's become a little bit of a buzzword though. Could you talk us through exactly what social distancing means and how it's meant to help prevent the spread of the virus?
So just a quick disclaimer, I am not a doctor and I'm not trying to give a medical opinion here. What we are trying to discuss is individual feelings about our understanding, and I hope we can share this with our audience as well and inspire some discussions and helpful thoughts. So social distancing, I guess a few concepts that we have to first understand is how a disease is transmitted, and also the concept of probability of transmission. So how are respiratory conditions transmitted? Some of the most notable ways of transmission include droplets, which is when you spit or sneeze or cough or just talk in general. Salivas or other secretions of the respiratory tract gets projected out. Now, these droplets are relatively large in size, so they don't float in air, they drop onto the ground. And hence, social distancing helps, because all you're trying to do is distance yourself for far enough that all the generated droplets have dropped to the ground as opposed to being spat onto the face of the person in front of you. The thing that social distancing couldn't help with would be aerosol transmitted diseases. So for some conditions, such as measles, in fact, the particles that are potentially infectious are so small that they can float in air. So no amount of social distancing within a small room is going to qualify. You just have to be out of that room where it's filled with floating aerosols of infectious particles. So this is not the case with COVID. And so in terms of what we're calling a social distancing, I feel like it's because our home and other less formal settings, I suppose, people are in contact for way longer a time. And this is where the concept of probability of transmission comes in. So even if you have a few virus particles on your body, in your mouth, whether it's spat onto your face or into a wound or whatever, as soon as it breaches your physical barrier, there's a chance that it gets into your bloodstream and starts to infect the areas that's at risk. In the case of COVID, it's a respiratory tract, so all the way from mouth down to the lungs. obviously that's not a certain thing. All of us have different levels of immunity and our body works differently. So for the same amount of viral particles, there's a different risk of infection, and that risk of infection obviously increases with exposure. So if people are in contact for an extended period of time, for example, if someone's living with their partner and sleeping on the same bed, even if you're maintaining 1.5 meter, which is very difficult, for some lucky people out there, you might have a bed that's not big enough for 1.5 meter of social distancing, but it still wouldn't help because the particles that people produce is going to go everywhere anyway. So hence the concept of social distancing in more formal places where distancing actually helps to reduce the chance of infection.
Interesting. All right. So I'm also hearing reports that the epicenter of the pandemic, which was Wuhan in China, has almost got to the stage where it's getting no new cases. This seems to point to China handling the outbreak pretty well. What are your thoughts on that? Being obviously born in China, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
I felt that it's an interesting comparison with what happened in the SARS break more than 10 years ago. So I grew up, I was at school in fact, when SARS happened, and that was scary times. For those of you who haven't looked into too much into SARS, it's a disease that's of the same type of virus, same family of virus, coronavirus, but it is more infectious and more deadly. And compared to our current situation in Australia, the other difference is China has way higher population density. And as currently a developing country, it has less healthcare resources. So in comparison, I think a lot of lessons were learned from those times. And this time, as seen in Wuhan, a lot of resources have been focused very early on to build isolation hospitals that's targeted in treating coronavirus. That's a very valuable lesson that we potentially might have learned a bit too late in SARS. So this time, obviously with the power of hindsight, there's a lot of things that could have been done better in China. But overall, I think the lessons that were learned in SARS were put into use this time around. And we're seeing less of an extreme outbreak, and at least relative to SARS. The other thing is that what people felt, I guess what some people experience is the actual infection. What everyone experienced in a time like this is the emotional turmoil of COVID. And having grown up in, or having had that experience, at least some of fellow people of Chinese extraction, like me, can know that society won't collapse as we know it, because it didn't last time for a situation that's way worse. Mm. So at the end of the day, there is some hope.
Talk me through how you felt the last time it happened, so to speak.
As a child, it is certainly way more scary. I mean, any condition, any disease that's scary, right? If, say, for example, if eating M&M, to borrow an analogy I've heard, has 3% mortality, I would avoid eating M&M forever and be very much scarred for the rest of my life. So it doesn't matter what the mortality is. Nonetheless, it is scary. As a child, though, you see the world sort of differently. At least at that time, my understanding of death is very different. And so even though every death seems very scary and incomprehensible and all that, I guess some people might have had this experience before, there's a lot of uncertainty and confusion about what it all meant. Coming back this time around, obviously I know more about what it means to be infected and what it means to be to suffer all those terrible consequences. So I guess to get back, or at least trying to get back to your question, I can't give you a good answer, because last time I was a kid and I was more confused and scared. This time I'm not.
Do you think that part of the reason so much panic has happened, even though there hasn't been a huge mortality rate, is because people sort of have the same instinct as you did as a child, just not being exposed to this before?
I think that's certainly right. A lot of us, through even families or other things, might have experienced or heard about the effects of war and effects of famine and other things. Plague is a very new thing, a very new concept to many of us. And so naturally as humans, we fear the unknown. And so there's no doubt there's a lot of fight and flight response happening. And as some of us might have heard, long-term fight or flight response is, of course, stress response. And that changes the way we see things. I felt that in these times, we tend to be more aggressive, more suspicious, and more anxious and upset about everything in general. I was having the experience the other day eating a piece of cheesecake by myself, and it's just different. It was less enjoyable.
Couldn't enjoy the delicious cheesecake because there's right. no one to enjoy it with.
Yeah, exactly. The cheesecake didn't do anything wrong. It's the same piece of cheesecake.
Don't blame the cheesecake. No, I think that's just a brilliant point. I also was eating cheesecake by myself about half an hour ago, and I was really just hoping this wouldn't last for the next 6 months, you know, because I think potentially this could, yeah, just lead to really devastating consequences for society. We're already very distant with the, I don't know, growth of social media and everything, and now we are being asked to be more distant. Can we recover from this?
I think we can. And obviously this is coming from an optimistic perspective, from given the past experience we're recurring from another epidemic of a worse disease. Part of the experience, I guess, Australia has learned from previous recessions is that big stimulation packages work. For example, what the Rudd government did in 2008. Now, that recovery, interestingly, is at least partly because demand is low, supply is high, no one has money. So Rudd's stimulation package stimulated demand and helped our overall trend towards a recession. This time around, the challenge is a lot bigger. I don't think they're insurmountable. They are, no doubt very extremely challenging because we have less supply. People are not making things, people are not working. We also have less demand. No one's going out and buying things apart from toilet paper, pasta, rice,
yep.
and those things that you can't find in the supermarkets. So even though the Australian government has started a very sizable stimulation package, our concerns...
I'm not sure if you saw today, sorry, just to cut in, Dan Andrews, the Victorian Premier, has just announced a new scheme to get people into, I guess, a state workforce as emergency relief workers. People who have lost their jobs in hospitality can apply for jobs within that initiative. So will those kind of innovative, out-of-the-box thinking solutions help? In your opinion?
The fundamental point is that we shouldn't sit here and do nothing. If something is more likely to help than to cause harm, then we should probably do it, particularly in these extreme times, because sitting around, we're only going to slide into a recession. So anything, even though it's... I don't think that's the most perfect idea, since sliced bread, but it's an idea, and we should work on something. I've been in the ED a few weeks ago. Of course, now I have stopped. I have to say, I was met with a most kind group of patients. I certainly cannot say that for all Victorian healthcare workers. I've heard stories from colleagues about being discriminated against. Initially looking like they're Chinese. Now, of course, it's extending to looking like they're Iranian and Italian.
Mm-hmm.
And no one can escape now because obviously it's spreading into Europe. So even if you're Caucasian, you're still high suspicion. Speaking of the blame game, though, an interesting point to observe is that even though our community as a whole, I think, has progressed very far from the racist entity that we were 100 or 200 years ago. There's this certain level of interesting consensus that diet level of racism is all right. So, for example, before this pandemic, there's always this thing that if you joke about an Asian kid being good at maths, it's sort of as an acceptable form of joke, even though, as most people can see, it's just a toned-down form of racism. So when diet racism was all right before, I guess that always provides a sort of a slippery slope into what the situation is now, which is full-blown racism seems to be okay for some people suddenly. I think in Australia, most people are being extremely kind and well informed. But unfortunately, at least in Victoria, we have seen a lot, by a lot, I mean more than 3 cases of healthcare workers being discriminated against and refused to be treating doctors purely on the basis of their face, which is not acceptable.
It's crazy. People are, in fact, saying that this is an argument to go back more to the roots of nationalism, to be a less globalized world, to, in fact, ground those flights for longer. Do you think that that's a solution, or do we just have to embrace globalization and work together on these healthcare initiatives into the future?
I think we're pretty much on the trajectory of globalization a bit too far to turn back now. Maybe, and I wouldn't know, there could potentially be a different path that humanity could have taken 300 years ago other than globalization. But now we are connected, and it's going to be extremely difficult to turn back, and turning back doesn't result in any good outcomes. So we have to move forward on this path. And the rise of the right wing certainly is a political paradigm in a lot of countries in the last decade. What can we say? In the past, we've learned that nationalism sometimes work in very odd ways. For example, or not saying nationalism, the USSR model of locking everything down have worked for a while, in fact. And we know that it doesn't work forever, because innovation and technology and the path that humanity is currently on relies so much on the exchange of ideas and commodities. And if we take that away, the modern form of democratic capitalism as we know it doesn't work. And so we have to go into a completely different system of society, which I don't think people are ready to embark on that journey.
I guess it's the idea that, yes, we are more globalized and more vulnerable to these pandemics, but in the same vein, we do also have that same ability to share knowledge with everybody around the world and hopefully get a solution that works for everyone.
That's right. For a, or what I felt, a very small price we pay, we get a lot of reward. For example, at least in Australia, most of the ventilators we use in intensive care units, so that's the machine that breathes for patients who have lost the ability to breathe properly using their own lungs. These machines are made overseas. If we shut down the borders, we can make it, Australians can make it. It's going to take so long that most intensive care patients will probably die in the process of us making ventilators. And similarly, most of the other technology we have developed in order to treat infectious diseases are international. And so opening up borders have led to more good things than bad things. And overall, at least in terms of health, I think it has improved our well-being so much.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Worldviews. I hope you enjoyed it. If you had your own thoughts about today's episode, feel free to get in contact via our Instagram page, worldviews_podcast. I'd love to hear from you. Otherwise, stay tuned for more episodes coming very soon. Lots of love.